You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould. 14 Charlottesville High School students presented their versions of TED Talks called Thought Blocks. The event was held on March 16, 2015, at the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative. Jean Horn, who teaches public speaking too at the high school, introduced the speakers.
These guys have been incredible. I teach a public speaking one class as well, and the difference is it's mind-blowing, the difference between these kids and public speaking one. They've learned so much, and these speeches hopefully will blow you away. They do me. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. We are going to take an intermission, about 5 to 7 minute intermission, because listening to a lot of speakers is, you need to stretch and not listen to speakers for a bit. So we are going to take an intermission. What's going to happen is these five are going to speak. I'm then going to show you a video from a girl who cannot be here because Cara Warren can't be here because she's working on the play. I'm going to show you a video of her speech, and then we're going to take an intermission. Sound groovy? And then we'll come back and do our final. We have two coming late, so we'll do our final five. Excellent. All right. Give it up for yourselves for having great hits. Give it up for our first kids.
All right, so hi everybody. I'm Haley Warren, in case John Russell didn't shout it loud enough. And I am here to talk to you today, both with and about language. So there is a curious power in words, which is funny when you think about what they are. Right now, I'm taking some air and moving it past some funny little muscles in my throat, and then or strings in my throat, and then shaping it with some muscles in my face, and beaming it straight to your brains in a pattern you miraculously recognize as English. And as you know, English has another side to it, a side of squiggles lined up and perfectly arranged just so. And when you hear those sounds or see those squiggles, your brain goes off in alarm. Wee-oo, 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 wee-oo. Hey, I recognize that pattern. And that is what we call a word. We hear and see these words all around us every day. We listen to them and other people speaking. We read them on billboards, on the internet. We use them ourselves to get our own point across. Language is a toolbox, a boundless toolbox full of infinite uses and impossible to imagine meanings. If you want to do the absolute minimum communication necessary, you can dig inside the toolbox and pull out a pointy stick. That's like sending a text message. If you wanted to do a little more, you could send an email or grab a hammer, which I don't know if we have in here. But somewhere in here there's a hammer, because this is an analogy and that's important. And if you wanted to do even a little more than that, you could take out a screwdriver, which I do have, and write a full 5-paragraph essay. Now, today, that's where most people stop. It is not where the toolbox stops. Oh no, most certainly is not. The toolbox is boundless. It has room not only for sticks and hammers and screwdrivers, but also for power drills, Allen wrenches, hex keys, belt sanders, even a blowtorch or two. But no matter. So many of us stop digging after we become proficient with the barest elements. And that's because society has told us to do that. Why dig, we're told, when we can get our point across with a hammer and some nails? Society seems to have weighed the pros and the cons and found that a generic workforce is more valuable than the art of writing. And as a result, that art has largely been swept off the table. Oh, sure, we're still taught the value of writing in school, but when I ask my classmates why they wrote, hardly any said that they wrote it for creativity or self-expression. The vast majority of my classmates said that the only time they wrote was because what someone made them. A teacher made them write something. That's the only time they wrote. This is sad. This should rend our hearts and send our mournful wails to the heavens, or at the very least make us look at the problem. When students only write because someone forces them to do so, it crushes creativity. It squashes motivation. It makes people forget everything they can do with the beautiful practicality of language. It makes us forget that writing is more than just hammering out some boring information on a detested topic. It makes us forget that writing is the perfect fusion of heart and mind, logic and imagination. And it is deeply saddening that we could forget something like that. Now imagine. Just think about it. You line up metal to metal, squinting through your mask as your welding spits sparks. You fit each gasket with careful precision. And as you solder the last wire to the last connection, you look up and you see what you have made. It's a starship that you made with your own hands, heart, mind. It's yours. It can go to any world in the entire universe. Congratulations. It's a story, and it's ready to take anyone, anywhere. I lived my childhood in starships like that. As you can imagine, I was a pretty nerdy little kid. And I liked to read almost as much as I liked to play pretend. Now, most of these games of imagining revolved around books or Star Wars. Mostly books. Books or Star Wars. But the only problem with the books I loved as a child, like Harry Potter, Ender's Game, The Hobbit, and incidentally also Star Wars, was their almost total lack of playable female characters. I would usually play these games with two or three friends, and so that's three, maybe four girls to one protagonist slot. Some of the biggest fights I remember from my childhood were over who would be Hermione or Princess Leia. And so, when I started to write and think about my own stories, I built a world, and I filled it with female characters. I made it matriarchal. It was ruled by a queen. The schools were taught by women. Even most of the villains were all girls. And I invited my friends, and we would play in this haven of girls' space. And of course, when I was older and thought a little more about how biology would have to work, I filled it back up with some male characters, but the protagonists were still mostly female. And because that's what writing does. It gives an author, a thinker, a space, both expansive and safe, to express numerous thoughts and opinions. And others' writing gave me that jumping off point to start my own. Urged on by the invisible authors of the books I loved, I kept creating, even when school tried to stop me. As a kid, I kept playing my games. When I outgrew those games, I started writing their stories. I expanded to include more plots, more planets, even a language. And eventually, I took a bigger leap from writing stories to writing my own book. It was the hardest thing I have ever done. And it took every ounce of willpower I had to get there. That and jumping into the freezing lake that is National Novel Writing Month. National Novel Writing Month, called NaNoWriMo for short, sets forth a challenge to each writer who attempts it. The challenge goes like this. Write 50,000 words in 30 days, all managed by one tiny, measly writer who also happens to have a life outside Microsoft Word. It was not easy, but it worked. In the whole 2 years of trying to get my book off the ground, I wrote maybe 30,000 words. In that singular, frantic November, I wrote 55,000 words. And as I wrote across that boundary, that last word of my novel, I realized that I had come full circle. The empathy and reflection that I gained from reading, I could deepen it in writing. And maybe, just maybe, there was a chance that my writing could spark that same cogitation in somebody else. And that brings me to my next point.
Writing is more than a five-paragraph essay or childish escapism. Language is a toolbox, yeah? Right? So maybe we can use those tools inside of it to fix what is broken in our world. The most obvious way I can think of doing this is fair and balanced journalism. But the fact remains that our fiction shapes our non-fictional narrative. The best example I can possibly call to mind of this is the science fiction of the 20th century. The creativity and the inspiration of those authors helped boost technology and urge it forward to the point where we are as modern as we are today. So maybe books with female protagonists, protagonists of color or of different sexualities, maybe that can help us take another step forward toward equality. But just like writing is more than the basics, it doesn't have to be serious. Writing can be whatever you want it to be. A spaceship, yeah, a treehouse, a shoe, a spoon. So tonight, I have a challenge for all of you. When you get home, sit down. Find something to write with and something to write on. And then, just go. Write about whatever you want. You can journal on a thought you had this morning, or shed light on a whole world that doesn't even exist yet. You can describe a person you've never met, or just write down something that you did this afternoon. Just whatever you want. Paint your words with a bright brush. Fear no judgment. Solder them securely in your heart. Encourage others to do the same, and know that your words, no matter how rough or beautiful, they're yours. You brought them into this world. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Quincy Pinkston, and today I will be delivering a speech on the import of happiness. Do you know what happiness looks like? For me, happiness looks sort of like a dance. Whenever I get really happy or excited, I do this thing where I start to rock back and forth from foot to foot. I wring my hands, sometimes I fan myself, and this huge grin plants itself on my face and refuses to move no matter how hard I try to make it. The coolest thing about my happy dance is how it actually manages to make me feel happier. And other people's variation of the happy dance makes me feel happy too. Most of us know happy when we see it. But what about when we feel it? Happiness is easily distinguished from an outside perspective, but what actually is happiness? For me, happiness is something I feel when I watch Lord of the Rings or Star Wars. I feel it when I beat my sister around a Mario Kart. When I hang out with my best friend, or when I finally finish that 4-page essay that was due a week and a half ago. Still haven't finished it. But not everyone gets happy about the same types of things. Camping, snow, ramen noodles, TV shows, and music are just a few of the things that makes my friends happy. And when my friends get happy, it makes me feel happy. I call this the circle of happiness. Okay, so story time. While I was in the process of writing this speech, I stumbled upon a quote that goes, "It's not about forcing happiness, it's about not letting sadness win." I was like, wow, that's really profound. I like that a lot. I'm gonna use that. So I looked it up to try to find out who said it, and it turns out the quote is actually lyrics to a song called "Local Man Ruins Everything" by the Wonder Years. So I ended up watching a 4.5 long music video to a loud, poorly written song that featured a man in a pigeon costume looking sad. As dumb as that sounds, that sad pigeon actually got me thinking. That sad pigeon made me feel sad. I kept waiting to see if the pigeon was going to get happier at the end or not, but since he was a pigeon, I couldn't read his facial expressions well enough to tell if he got happier or not. It made me sad, not knowing whether he got happier or not. If you think about it, we are all like that poor guy in the music video who definitely did not get paid enough to walk around in public dressed as a pigeon for at least a whole day. We're all people who put on costumes to face the day. Some people put on costumes to make them get through the day feeling invincible. Like if I were to dress up as Darth Vader every morning and hum the Imperial March on my way to school. Other people wake up, put on power suits, and become Leslie Knopes. But some people, when they wake up, eat their Wheaties, and go to get dressed for the day, they open up their closet only to be assaulted by pigeon costumes. In case you haven't noticed yet, the pigeon is sadness. But we don't have to wake up and be pigeons. I mean, there are definitely times when if you don't feel sad, you're missing a pretty important piece of yourself. But do you know anyone who only owns one outfit? It's perfectly fine to be a pigeon one day and Leslie Knope the next. Your happiness, even though it might not always seem like it, is almost entirely dependent upon you. Scary thought, right? Okay, so later on, during the same speech writing process, I stumbled upon the best set of pictures I've ever seen. It's probably 4 or 5 pictures documenting a baby elephant's first time on a beach. I was going to have the pictures up behind me, but you'll just have to use your imagination. In one of these pictures, this baby elephant is literally falling face forward into the ocean. His whole face is submerged, trunk and all. You can't even see his face. And he still looks happier than anyone I've ever seen in my whole life. So, what if, in the morning, instead of being assaulted by pigeon costumes, you were greeted by a happy baby elephant? So, take the pigeon costumes to the cleaners and become happy. Thank you.
My speech kind of snuck up on me.
How?
I don't know. It was quicker than I thought it would be. Hello, my name is John Russell Pinkston. Happy to have you all here today. I just want to make a footnote before I start. I am a little bit wearied of my speech. I've given it so many times that I'm getting a little bit, it feels surreal. That bothers me. Because the stuff I gotta say, it's very important. It's very important to me. So I'm gonna start out a little bit conversational, if you don't mind. Because the stuff that I gotta talk about is summing up a 10-year process of my life. It's a lot. So I gotta give it justice. And if I feel a little bit meh about my speech, then why the heck are you here? Alright, there we go. When I was a kid, I was one of those kids that was always looking for a hero. Someone to idolize, someone to look up to. One of those immortal people. Someone that has no flaw. You know? Someone that I could be jealous to become. I joined Boy Scouts, as anyone who's had any kind of conversation with me probably knows. And I found that role model in an older boy. Taller, pretty funny guy. Awesome. Just awesome. He was one of those people that had it all down pat. He knew exactly what to do. He was one of those people that I admired, that I wanted to become, that I wanted to be like. We talk about strong morals in Scouts, and believe me when I say he had it. He's one of those people that you look up and you idolize and you think, you know what, he's got it all. He's perfect. So, you can imagine some shock when, a couple days after going back from a camp out, I learned that he has killed himself. Like, what the heck? You know what I'm saying? You kind of come reeling back and there's this confusion that comes in tragedy. But you just think, well, what do I do now? It was a lot. It was a lot. But I kept on looking for a hero. Someone to idolize. And I found a great candidate in my granddad. A man walking in. He had such a persona about him. He was so powerful in mind and in spirit that when I found out that he had cancer, I literally laughed. I said, that man, he's too stubborn to let the cancer beat him. Because if anyone was, he was. And the time came, and I found myself pretty confused, speaking words that I still can't remember at his funeral. And there comes a point where you just gotta take a breath and say, gosh, you know? Like, what the heck? Because he was one of those people that I love more than a lot, you know? It was a bit and a half. It was a bit and a half. But then I start on the recovery trek, and I start thinking about other stuff, and I get it back into the routine, and I get it all back together. And when you know it, a tragedy struck our school. Something that was unique in its terribleness. How disgusting it was. A girl, never given enough kindness in her life. Never given enough kindness after. Brutally beaten to death. Murdered. In her own home. With her mother. And the house burns down on top. And you just think, oh, give me a break. You know? Like I said, there's a confusion that comes in trying to react. Because how do you react to something like this? Bigger questions than, well, what now come up? Like, well, what is the freaking point of all this? How do we live life facing death? Big questions for one so young. That's what Miss Horn said. Big questions. And they've been bothering me for 10 years. I'm at the hind end of a long trek. But there came a moment in my apathy and my disgust with the whole world where I found myself standing at this poor girl's vigil, surrounded by candles, big American flag, right? Beautiful. Just, you had to be there. realized that we were all united. Hundreds of us were all united in a kindness that was just insane, just beautiful. Breathtaking. Awe-inspiring. We were all united in common kindness. And that's when the great question that had tortured me since I was 7, staring up at the ceiling scared to death. That's when the answer came. How do we live life facing death? With all this pain? We make the most of it. We love life so well that when death comes and puts his hand on our shoulder, we can say, "Ha! Come get me. Because I got it down pat, because you can take me away, but I'll look to good." And how do we react to loss? When people like my granddad, this poor girl, this Boy Scout, they're taken away. The answer came to me back in that field of candles. When I was instantly back at my grandfather's bedside and people that had been friends with him for 50 years put their hands on my shoulders. They had a kindness in them, a love for their friend that was so powerful that they could share it with me, a stranger. And this was something so beautiful and unique that I had the answer. How do we react? How do we live life facing death? We don't worry about it. We live life so well that we have no fear. And we share a love so strong for your friends, for your family, that even in loss, even in pain, you can rest easy. And count yourself lucky. I am one of the luckiest guys on this earth. Because there is only one Chris Murray. There is only one Glenn Pinkston. And there is only one Mine Hubbard. And damn it, I knew them all. I spoke at my grandfather's funeral about hope. That's the one thing I remember. Saying we have hope. And whatever your belief, that is infinitely true. It is the great answer. And it is what has kept my depression at bay. For this world is messed up. We can make the most of it. And with people like these and people like these helping me out, I got it easier than most. So, that said, spread the love, give your friends some hugs. Thank you.
Picture this. You're walking down a hallway, the only one there, and then all of a sudden, another person steps out of a classroom and starts walking down that same hallway right towards you. Everyone knows this awkward feeling of passing somebody randomly in a hallway, somebody you don't even know. Do you make eye contact or not? Is there a greeting exchanged?
This situation kind of puts you off and makes you feel uncomfortable around that person. Therefore, doesn't allow you to realize how attractive they may be. Or maybe there's a different situation altogether. Does the person walking down that hall towards you have their head held high, confidently giving you the kind of smile you could imagine? Does that openness make you feel brighter, even happier? The difference in a person and their attractiveness is how they handle that situation. I think we all can agree here that the kind of beauty that we all crave is the kind of beauty that lasts forever, yeah? That beauty comes from actions and how we treat others and happiness. When I say attractive or attraction, I don't mean physical attractiveness, like many of you might mean. I mean attraction like a magnetic pull, an attraction so strong that you feel drawn to that person. The definition of attractive is providing pleasure or delight, especially in manner, pleasing, charming, alluring, possessing the ability to draw or pull. That is attraction. One of my favorite quotes is, "A woman whose smile is open and whose expression is glad has a kind of beauty no matter what she wears," said by Miss Anne Royfe. While I absolutely agree with this, I must also add that this saying applies to men as well. The first step to being attractive is being open. Open your mind. Allow yourself to take down that wall of judgment, blocking the acceptance. See the positives in everyone and everything. Relax your forehead a little bit. Let the tenseness in your shoulders drift away. Personally, listening to a relaxing ballad helps me to become less stressed, and therefore less closed, less grumpy, less unattractive. People who are open, friendly, who are happy, and have their eyes up contain that beauty, that attractiveness that everyone wants to have. When somebody's closed off, you cannot look them in the eye. You cannot make that connection. You cannot even wave or greet them because they don't even notice. Can I tell you the secret to why this openness works? Is that okay? Yeah? I see a couple nods. The secret is the way people work. People simply want to be around people that make them happy. There. It's as easy as that. Happiness is attraction. Now, I'm not telling you to go out there and have a complete change in attitude and be open and happy all the time. That's a little crazy and may make you seem like you're a little over the top. It's okay to have those days when you feel tired or stressed out or weighed down even. But it's your job to regain that optimistic attitude. Recently, I talked with many of my classmates who are sitting here and asked them what they think an attractive person is. I received a wide range of answers, including a curious or inquisitive person, someone who is your best friend who you can fall in love with, someone who is not involved in drama, someone who you can talk problems out with, someone who is smiling, open, happy, and someone who is humorous, and appreciates humor. I had quite a few people say that the characteristics of having intelligence and good morals were very important. Then our talk turned to physicality. What did they find attractive physically? There weren't many specific characteristics that were mentioned. My classmates all said things like, someone who has good teeth or good smile. Someone who isn't obese or too thin. And the guys mentioned that they wouldn't want a relationship with a girl that's taller than them. One of my personal favorites was, if their face comes alive, said by Haley Warren. So that's the big thing here, the big idea here. That affects you when you're scanning that random stranger in the hallway, whether you consciously do it or not. So what does it mean if your face comes alive? This means that even if you don't know a single thing about that person, you can still see their character from how they walk, talk, act. That person shows curiosity from a barely noticeable eyebrow raise, or kindness from a small smile. Beauty is not exactly what you see in a printed magazine, but it is that optimistic person who is doing something important in their life. I want to challenge each and every one of you to make a difference in someone's day, to be that cheerful, attractive person that makes this world that much more beautiful. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Tommy Stadler. I'm in the 10th grade at Charlottesville High School. And today I'm going to be talking a little bit about something that I value a lot, and I'm sure you will too. I'm going to open with a quote that I find relates to this topic very well. Communication is a skill that you can learn. It is like riding a bicycle or learning to type. If you're willing to work at it, you can rapidly improve and increase the quality of your life. This was said by Brian Tracy, for those of you who don't know, is the CEO of a business who goes around and helps organizations get started and become successful. And in this quote, Brian mentions something that I think is very important, which is communication. And this is what I'm going to be talking about today. And when Brian says communication, he's referring to every aspect. But today I'm going to focus on one very important part of it, which is teamwork. In today's world, teamwork is extremely important. Look at business, look at politics, medicine, the education program. They all require teamwork, and they all require communication. Large companies can't be run by one person. A surgeon can't do a surgery on their own. They need the help of a nurse or another doctor, and a politician cannot run an entire campaign on their own. Principals can't run a school on their own. Unless you have Miss Horn, and then you're pretty much set. Now, the list goes on and on of where communication and teamwork are needed in the workforce. But they're just some good examples of where it's really needed a lot. And I bet if I asked every person in this room, they would say that when they go to work, they're definitely going to be talking to others and communicating with others. And without communication, people would not be able to share their ideas and find solutions to problems. They wouldn't be able to work as a team. And if you can't communicate, you can't participate. And no matter how smart you are, you're never going to be able to get your ideas out to the team, and you won't be able to share some of the best qualities that you have to offer. Personally, I don't believe today's education system puts a large enough emphasis on how important communication is. While in school, students learn all about basic math and writing and maybe a different language, which is very important. Communication is something that they also need to learn too, because it can sometimes be forgotten. And you can see that especially in today's society because of the technology that kids are provided with. Today, we have smartphones, we have tablets, we have computers, and all of these things kids have access to, and they are the biggest distraction a child can have in their life, because you've got the world and media pretty much in the palm of your hand. If kids keep progressing on this path of only using technology in their daily life, it is only going to lead them to becoming introverts and not wanting to communicate with others and express their ideas because they're so focused on this one device. Now, even though this device is considered a way of communication. It keeps kids' heads down, and it keeps them away from the world. And their eyes aren't going to be on what's really important, which is what's going on around in front of you and what's going on in the physical world. They're simply focused on this digital reality. Now, although technology is a huge part of this anti-communicative, kids, they need... Alright, going back to my personal experience. I'm just going to completely forget that happened. So, I used to go to a school that was a very small private school, and while I was there, I saw some of the most amazing kids with some of the most amazing minds. But a lot of the times I saw what they didn't have was the ability to communicate with others. For example, some of these kids could solve some of the most complex math equations I've ever seen, but when it came to going and talking to another person or introducing themselves, it seemed like one of the hardest things for them. Now, this is why we need to teach these kids how to communicate, because if they don't know how to communicate, all they know how to do is solve complex equations or write 50-page essays, which are good, don't get me wrong. But if they don't learn how to communicate, they're going to find extreme giant roadblocks in life when it comes to applying for jobs, when it comes to going and finding work, or when it comes to telling their boss that they need something from them or need to take a day off. They're going to find it very hard to do that. So if we just told these kids how to communicate and how to express themselves and how to get their heads out of their little gadgets and gizmos, they would be much more happier, more successful people. And this is why I find Ms. Horn's class so valuable, because she really takes a student and teaches them how to do all of these things. She teaches them how to communicate. She teaches them how to express themselves through words, which is very important. And there really should be more teachers like Ms. Horn, because if there were, everyone would be talking and everyone would be expressing their ideas just like the way I am. Thank you.
I'm good. Okay. You already know, I'm Jack Smith. I was really counting on that 2-video buffer before my speech, so don't know how well I'm going to do. Okay. I'm going to start now. Our regular everyday routines of waking up in the morning, eating our breakfast, showering, not showering in my case, you know, going to school, hanging out with the same people, doing the same things, going home, going to sleep, and then repeating it all over again and get a little bit boring. That's why I think that every single person should put just a little bit of crazy in their life. I'm not talking about robbing a bank, wandering around the park at night in a realistic bear outfit, just doing bear things, or trying to tame a group of squirrels to sing competitive a cappella. That's just a tad bit too crazy. I'm also not talking about mixing different flavors of sodas, going in the outdoor, or touching that thing with the don't touch sign. It's just not crazy enough. I'm talking about the kind of thing that makes your life more exciting. It makes your life better. that, you know, you would never have this experience unless you just decided to go out and do something crazy. So I'm going to use some personal life experiences to showcase the kind of crazy that makes your life better. And for my dad, none of these things actually happened. My first one was on a Friday night. I was walking from my dad's house, which is up in the CHS area, down towards the mall. And once I got to the intersection, I think Melbourne and Park, I was just wiped from a full day of napping in class and not learning anything. So, you know, I kind of just like sat down on my backpack and I chilled out for a while. Napping and classing didn't happen either. So I just kind of chilled out a little bit until I saw this flatbed 18-wheeler truck with a trailer on the, with a tractor trailer on the back. So, you know, most people would have just like kept on walking, walked up to the mall, gone to hang out with their friends. But I, with my thing about doing crazy things, decided to hop on the back of that flatbed. Didn't happen. Hop on the back of that flatbed and ride up to the mall in style. And this was both interesting and fun and a learning experience. I learned that 35 miles an hour on the back of a flatbed truck is insanely fast. It is ridiculous. I also learned that truck drivers can have a little bit of a temper. My next one, a little bit tamer because, you know, my dad and everything. It was a Sunday night, just chilling at home, playing some Call of Duty, doing nothing. And I was hungry. So I went downstairs to grab some food, got the ice cream out of the fridge, got my bowl, put my ice cream on the counter, and I saw a bag of Fritos and chocolate sauce directly next to the ice cream. Now, a regular person would have taken two separate bowls, one for the Fritos and one for the ice cream and chocolate sauce. I scooped three massive heaping scoops of ice cream, sprinkled the Fritos on top, and then doused the whole thing in chocolate sauce. Now, most of you are probably puking right now. But he can vouch for me. This is the single most delicious thing in the entire world. I could open a 5-star restaurant and serve only this and make millions of dollars a night. It is ridiculous. And you know what? If I hadn't done something crazy, I never would have had that experience. I never would have had my future 5-star restaurant dish. My third one I came up with about 3-4 minutes ago. sorry, Ms. Horn.
No, it's awesome.
It was actually something I did recently on one of the snow days. It was me and my friends were going night sledding, and you know, we had all gone down, but somehow all of the sleds ended up at the bottom of the hill, and we were at the top of the hill. You know, it's too far. Way too far. So I decided, I saw the, like, a broken cover, like a tire cover for the back of a Subaru car, like, for the spare tire. And I decided that the single best thing I could do right now would be to hop on that and ride it down the hill like a snowboard. Most of the things have been fun. They've been interesting. This one was just downright stupid. I was at the big tiered hill. You guys know what I'm talking about. It's a giant tiered hill with a field at the bottom. Do you know what? You know
that?
No. Burley. I was at Burley Middle School. And I was so solid for the first 3 tiers. And then I decided to kind of like veer towards this jump that some kid had made earlier in the day. And, you know, I thought, you know, I would sail over, it would be glorious. It would be amazing. No, it wasn't amazing. I got to the jump, and somehow my sled stopped before the jump. So, and I didn't realize it until I got to, like, I was 30 feet in the air. Well, not 30 feet in the air, that's a slight exaggeration. 25 feet in the air. I was 25 feet in the air. And I was, you know, like this, like, ah, I'm gonna land this, it's gonna be great! And then I look down, I have no sled. So you guys remember the snow was like 6 inches, but what had happened over the day is that 6 inches of snow had packed into 1 inch of solid ice. So I hit the ground, broke both my knees. That didn't happen. I'm standing right now. No limbs were broken. I did lose most of my brain cells with the concussion that I got after that. And, you know, that, it was terrible. So, you know, don't do that, but... Like Haley, I challenge all you guys to go out and do something crazy, something fun, something that you would never do unless you had heard this speech. You can clap now.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here to talk to you today about a topic that really wouldn't come to mind. Customer behavior. Wait, what? Yes, I said it. Customer behavior. Not employee behavior, but customer behavior. You may think I am nuts for saying it, but customer behavior is as important as employee behavior. I know that every single person in here today has been in a grocery store recently. You may not have even seen an employee on the floor while you were walking around grabbing your groceries, but I guarantee you, there was multiple employees walking around stocking the shelves to make sure you could find what you were looking for very easily. Me, myself, I've been employed at a grocery store here in town for about 1.5 years now. I've seen almost everything imaginable, from fights between customers, from customers taking advantage of other customers, and even customers cursing out other employees, which is absolutely absurd. But out of all of that, my worst experience there was getting carts. Outside in the lot, when it was 32 degrees outside, and all I had on was a thin jacket and a baseball cap. It was a nightmare, to put it lightly. The biggest disappointment that I found were carts, not in the cart corral, but just left in parking spots near where the cars were of the customers that had previously used those carts, strewn all over the parking lot. Needless to say, it was a nightmare for me to try and get all the carts back into the store. That was utterly miserable. But on the flip side, coming in, I got free hot chocolate. So that was the good part about that. Like I said before, I've seen everything imaginable happen in a grocery store. But I have enough stories to stand here all night and tell you. But there is one story in particular that I would like to share with you this evening. It was a Thursday evening, late at night, around 7:30, 8 o'clock. We were very slow. I had a customer come through my line with only a few items. So I proceeded to ask him how he was doing, everything like that. He said he was great. He had just come from the gym and had a great workout. So I proceeded to ring up his order, and I asked him how he would like to pay. He said he would like to pay by check, and I said, that's absolutely fine. Just please fill it out, and I'll run it through our machine. He proceeded to fill it out, and I proceeded to put it through our machine. The machine popped up a question asking me to see an ID. So I proceeded to ask the customer for an ID. The customer said that he didn't have it because he had just been to the gym and all he had was his checkbook. So I called one of my fellow employees to see if there was a way to bypass this so he didn't have to show me his ID. She said that she didn't think so, but to contact a manager. So I called the manager over the phone, and I asked if there was a way to bypass it. And the manager said, no, unfortunately there wasn't. We need the ID number to be able to cash the check. So I conveyed that to the customer, and at this time the customer started to get rather irate. He started to say that I was harassing him because I wasn't letting him check out. At this point, I stepped back from the register, and I asked the customer if he would like me to call the manager down so he could speak to him himself. The customer was very happy to do so and was energetic about that. Energetic. So I proceeded to call the manager down, and the manager and my customer exchanged some words, some friendly and some less than friendly. Long story short, my manager had to escort this customer out of the store because he was being extremely irate and just unfriendly and unkind. This is absurd. Nobody should have to be escorted by a manager out of a grocery store. I mean, come on. A grocery store. So, I'm not accusing any of you of being like this. I'm positive that you are star customers, just like I'm a star employee. But I just urge you, next time you go on a shopping trip, just take a moment, acknowledge your cashier, engage in conversation with your cashier, engage in conversation with a passing employee walking to the back of the store. Put your phone down, have a face-to-face conversation for a minute. You might actually find that some of the people that work at the grocery stores are actually kind of fun to talk to. Thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm Genevieve Riley. I come before you this evening with about 4 speeches prepared because I've changed topics about that many times in the last 2 months. And so do not think that I'm cutting you short on not doing enough work for this wonderful speech and presentation when I say that I'm about to tell a story that is not prepared at all, but I hope you equally enjoy it. You see, life is pretty spontaneous, as we all know. Just this evening, I've been around all of Charlottesville trying to find one building. It's where city council meets. I've been to 4 different locations. Google Maps has told me about 4 different places. And I know my way around pretty well now. But that's not the point. The point is that we are so busy all the times. And we have so many different stresses in our lives. And it's easy to get caught up in the future. Where are we going? But I want to talk about being here now. And so to highlight this phenomena, I will tell a story back on February 28th. I remember it well. I was driving to my friend's house out in Culpeper County. There are lots of country roads, and as I have found, lots of deer. Now, first of all, I'm glad that my parents aren't here in the audience tonight because they would be up on here on stage giving me a lecture afterwards, so this is good. To get to my friend's house, you go through the town of Orange, and you go up a steep hill. And when you get to the steep hill, the top of the steep hill, there's an even steeper drop. And I love it. If any of you like roller coasters like me, this hill is the pinnacle of your driving, like, fantasies. And so, to get down this hill, I don't just have to cruise. I have to have music. Because I believe that every beautiful moment in our life should have a song playing in the background that just encompasses the atmosphere. And so I pull up to the stop sign at the top of the hill, and I'm clicking through songs. And yes, there are cars behind me, and they are very angry, but I've just completely tuned them out. I'm searching for songs, and I find one. I find Phoenix by Fall Out Boy, if any of you have listened to it, and I let the music kind of like heighten up in the beginning. And so I'm still waiting for the song, and there's still people behind me. Finally, you might say that the beat drops, and then so I start dropping. And I am cruising down this hill. Now, if you just cruise without applying gas, you know, from 0, you'll probably get to 45 at the bottom. It's a neighborhood, by the way. It is 25 miles per hour legally. But I apply a little gas because my record before was 52 miles per hour. And with a beautiful song playing in the background, I couldn't just let this go to waste. So I started applying gas. And going and going and going and going. I get up to 63, and I am killing it. I'm not proud of this. But at the time, I am screaming the song. I am like looking at all the people in my rearview mirror that just keep on getting smaller and smaller. I have my shades on, needless to say. It was great. It was great until a deer went in the road. Now, most deer are, you know, they're all stupid, but most of them will run across the road. This deer was a little bit slower, probably mentally and obviously physically, because it just kind of walks in the road like this. Doesn't even move when it sees me coming at it at like 70 miles per hour. And so I'm looking around mainly for policemen, because the town of Orange is like covered in policemen. So finally, like, I catch this deer, and of course it doesn't catch my eye that much because it's not even moving very fast. There's no like sensor movement in my attention. But I slam on my brakes. I maybe slow down to 50, like 45, 50 if I was lucky. I was still cruising pretty good. And I just kind of shut my eyes. And I just want to tell you, that's not what you should do when you're about to hit a deer. It's probably like, you know, you probably want to scream some good last words, like, I love you, Mom and Dad. But that wasn't even going through my head, because I'm just like, kind of like, oh, nope. Kind of like bracing for impact. I remember the words going through my head, brace for impact. That's always been my motto driving, because that's what Captain Sullivan said when he landed the plane on the Hudson. So those words have stuck with me. So I'm thinking, oh, brace for impact. anticipating the airbag. But I don't hit the deer. And it was probably a miracle. It wasn't a hallucination, I know that much. But it was pretty much a miracle, because when I open my eyes, the deer is just still in the road, but it's kind of like still looking around like, this chick's crazy. And so I get to my friend's house and I run inside. I didn't even knock, really. I was too like on edge, because after I opened my eyes, it kind of, that's when the adrenaline set in, and I started doing my panicked kind of like noise where I start going, ah! 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 So for the next mile that I was driving to my friend's, I'm going, ah! The whole way. When I open the door and run into the room doing that, my friends are like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I'm like, I almost just hit a deer, and I was listening to music, and I was blasting it. And you really know that you have best friends when your friend comes and puts her arm around you, and she goes, what song was it? And I was just like, is that all you think? It was Phoenix, my Fall Out Boy. And then my friend comes up and goes, oh, nice. That's the song to die to. So I was met with lots of welcoming friends to kind of cool my nerves, and I was not doing my little ah! Noise anymore, luckily. But that moment was probably the closest I've ever been to death, and I know that John Russell here has been closer to death probably 1,000 more times from his crazy camping trips, but this was the closest I've ever been to at least some serious injury. And it really, after that moment, kind of showed me that, like, I need to just kind of focus in on the moment. Yes, I was a little bit too much in the moment while I'm cruising down that hill, but still looking ahead, you know, it was a selfish act to endanger my life in such a way going down that hill. And so while we should live in the moment, we should also look to the future and not jeopardize it. And so as a college senior, I know I'm definitely looking to the future, and but at the same time, it's good to live in the present and have a balance for where we are. We're all blessed to be here this evening and hear some wonderful speeches here at the Bridge, hear myself and all my other classmates. And so I encourage you all to live in the moment. Remember this. Memories will be made tonight, as I'm sure they've already been, because I just got in here late. Being spontaneous. I came from soccer practice. Everyone else is dressed very nicely, but I'm a little bit more my... This is nice for me, actually, if you've ever seen me at school, Ms. Lucas. Anyways, I hope you enjoy your evening, and thank you for taking the time to listen.
All right, so I get to go last, which I'm excited about. I was kind of hoping to go last. If Elliot shows up, he can go last, but I think it'll be me. So, hi, my name is Tess Kendrick, and I am here to talk to you about magic. When I say magic, I don't mean fairy tale magic with wand-wielding wizards and flying carpets. No, I'm talking about a simpler sort of magic. What I mean is being able to pause and to see the beauty in everyday things. Have you ever noticed how happy little kids always seem to be? It's because for them, the world is full of magic. That's why they believe in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy. Those things for them are no less real than how when they turn on the faucet, water comes out. It's magic. As we get older, our lives focus less on stories and imagination, and more on logic and facts. Our responsibilities grow, and our free time diminishes. Yes, we become more productive and task-driven, which has allowed humanity to accomplish previously unimaginable feats. My only problem with this shift away from magic, however, is that as we get older, we also seem to become less and less happy. This isn't true all the time, but it's truer than I would like to believe. Rather than observe the world as children do, adults focus on what the world can do for them. I find myself becoming more like this as I'm becoming an adult, but I'm trying to resist it. Maybe this is just because adults' lives are busier and they have less time to stop and notice the world around them. Adults are encouraged to work harder. They have to pack their schedules to the bursting point and keep working and keep going. They become frustrated when it snows and they have to shovel their sidewalks and scrape their cars. To them, there is nothing beautiful about the rainbow of water pouring out of a broken pipe. A traffic jam on the way to work is just frustrating, rather than an opportunity to watch the sunrise. This self-focused lifestyle leaves very little time to ever notice the magic happening around them. The naivete of a child's view of the world gives them a much more poetic outlook. For a child, everything is fresh and new and worth watching. They have a way of finding the magic in even the most ordinary of moments. While adults drive by a construction site complaining about the traffic, kids stop on the sidewalk to watch the cranes moving through the sky. Kids pick up that mysterious object in the road to see what it is, while adults pretend not to see it at all. Kids climb trees and look out across the world once they get to the top. Adults don't climb trees. I believe that pessimism and general unhappiness in adults is a problem, and I believe that looking for magic is the way to fix it. We've forgotten what it means to be in awe of the simple little things. We no longer rush out into the snow and play and stand outside to feel the electricity of oncoming thunderstorms. I invite you tonight to look for the magic around you. I invite you to take a pause in your day, to notice what's happening in your surroundings. If you have time, do something spontaneous. Do something a little crazy. Go for a walk in the rain, cloud watch, make up stories about people you see. Remember that what your eyes see is a reflection of what your brain expects to see. When you expect magic, it appears. You are in control of your perceptions of the world. So shape your view of the world to include a little more magic. And I think you'll find yourself feeling happier. Thank you.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.